Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another podcast for In the Black. I'm Mike, and I'm here to talk with you today about what just happened this week in both the equities and bonds and crypto markets. If you have been investing your money into stocks or into crypto, you've likely noticed that there has been a massive sell-off between both markets. The S&P 500, the Dow, the NASDAQ, which are all indices of a greater basket of stocks in the stock market, are all down a lot this week. This has been a very bad week if you're a trader, because you're seeing pretty much a sea of red. The Dow fell 4.6% this week. The S&P fell a whopping 5.7% this week, and the NASDAQ dropped 7.6% this week, for a total of 14% down since its all-time highs in November. That is very alarming. Like I said, if you have your money, especially into tech and growth plays, that number is way higher. You're looking at, heck, Netflix. I think they dropped 20%. And just the after hours after they announced not that they were missing going to be that short on revenue, but they announced that the subscribership, what they're anticipating new subscribers, was half of what the Wall Street estimates were. And that sent that stock into a tailspin. So we're seeing that a lot of these stocks, especially tech stocks, are getting bludgeoned today. There's very hard to find any green in the market. And what we're noticing is a lot of people are saying that this tech-driven sell-off is a rotation into more value plays. But if you look at the Dow Jones is down as well. So I think that narrative is a little overplayed by people who want to sound like they know exactly what's going on. Because if that was the case, you would expect all that money rotating from tech stocks and tech plays and growth plays into the Dow Jones, you expect the Dow Jones to be going up, but no, the Dow Jones is also falling. As we come up upon next week, which has a lot of earnings, you have some big players like Apple and Tesla that are going to be reporting, and also you have another Fed meeting, and everybody knows that if you've been following the stock market at all, whenever the Fed announces or has a meeting, it has any notes from the meeting or any a press conference after the meeting or any kind of information that comes out of these Fed meetings, you know, the markets tend to react more than likely to the downside. And if Apple and Tesla do not report earnings beats, then more than likely that's going to take the market with it, because they have such a big percentage of that's what makes up the S&P and the NASDAQ. So looking at that, it could be another choppy week ahead. You know, I would like to say that we've reached the bottom, but we still could fall farther than this. All that money that's rotating out of tech, growth, and at this point, even the low PE ratio plays that primarily make up the Dow Jones, where's that money going, right? I always tell people, it's like, well, follow the money. Well, where is the money going? It's sitting on the sidelines. And we know that money can't sit on the sidelines for forever, because if you're just holding cash, you're getting eaten away at 7% inflation. So you'll be losing money there as well. So the question is, where is this money going to go into next? A lot of people are trying to figure out whether or not they should just sell at these massive losses. Should they rotate their more riskier tech and growth plays into more stable companies like Coca-Cola or, other like Johnson & Johnson, other blue chip stocks? Or should they just ride out the storm? I've been wrestling with this myself. I think the best way to go about it for me is try to just ride out the storm. I might consolidate my portfolio, consolidate my losers together, right? So I have some stocks that are kind of they're very correlated together, so I might as well consolidate them into one stock. This is easier to track one stock than it is to track many. So I might consolidate, but that'll be consolidating into the players I already have. I don't think I'm going to rotate them into blue chips and growth plays, because once the bottom is reached and the bounce back starts, it's gonna be rapid. You're gonna see, you know, a lot of these tech plays go up 3, 4, 5% a day. And, you know, you're going to sit there and wait and say, hey, maybe this is a dead cat bounce. And for those who don't know what a dead cat bounce is, it's when it looks like the market is going to rebound, but it falls, you know, it ultimately falls again. We saw a couple of those this week. We saw a pretty bad one on Thursday where the market, the NASDAQ, was up almost 2%, a little over 2%, and then had a reversal intraday. So in the middle of the day, it fell all the way back to that. It closed at a little over negative 1.5%. That's very rare. That's only happened 7 times in the last 10 years. The market, normally those big indices do not move like that. So you're seeing a lot of volatility. We have a lot of things going on with pretty much how the Fed is going to react. So the Fed's, it's kind of interesting. So you have Jerome Powell, he's the Fed chair, and he's kind of having to walk this tightrope. Because the way you think about it is, okay, he has to raise rates and taper off the purchasing of assets and start offloading those assets from their asset sheet. But if they do that too aggressively, the markets will crash. But if they're not aggressive enough, inflation will continue to rise. And I expect inflation to rise again next month. What they're trying to do is slow the rate of rising and then slowly bring it back down to their targeted level, which is around 2% inflation. So he's trying to walk this tightrope, and there's, of course, political pressure at play because the Biden's administration ratings are at record lows. They have under-delivered on a lot of their promises, and now the markets are negatively reacting to the Fed's decision to raise rates. So he's looking at inflation on one hand, and he has the markets tanking on the other, and trying to find a balance. So he's going to have to probably announce something, I'm thinking, this week that calm the fears in the markets to bring some kind of stability. Because at the rate things are going, it's going to, especially going into midterms, the Biden administration is going to be putting a lot of pressure on the Fed to resolve inflation and resolve the market crashing. How's that going to happen? I don't know. That's a tough job to be in. I wouldn't want to be in his shoes trying to figure and navigate this out, because it's almost like having your cake and eating it too. I don't know what the best ways to go about it. Maybe announcing that you're going to raise rates, but they're going to be slower than what the market anticipates, and you're going to not sell off as many assets as you said you were. But it's definitely in a tough position. But here's an interesting thing that has recently come out. The actual value of the dollar, right, is stronger than ever when compared to other currencies, right? So we have a strong, strong dollar, but it's a rapidly inflating dollar. And I know you're thinking, how can that happen? How can a dollar also be strong, but inflation's at 7%? Well, the reason that can happen is because other economies around the world are also facing rapid currency inflation. So you look at the Japanese yen or the Turkish lira, that's an extreme example. They're going through almost hyperinflation. Looking at a lot of other currencies around the world, their value of their currencies is inflating at a higher percent than ours. So when you compare that, you know, that currency to ours, it looks weaker. So now we have a strong dollar, which means that a lot of companies, it behooves a lot of companies to trade in their currency for ours because it's performing stronger. Even though it's inflating rapidly at 7% itself, it's performing stronger than all other currencies. You know, that's pretty much everything except the Chinese dollar. But they just announced that they're going to cut their rates, which is going to probably inflate their dollar. So we don't know how long that's going to last. But the yuan has been pretty strong against the dollar. But we'll see how that, you know, ends up being. Now that they've announced they're slashing their rates, that's going to provide more easy money for their economy. And usually the reason you slash rates from the central bank is because you're thinking that your economy is slowing down, which you don't want it to do. So it's interesting that we have this strong dollar, which in theory should lower imports. That means goods coming into the U.S. In theory, the imports should be cheaper, but our exports will be more expensive, right? So what's that mean for you in the short term? we may start seeing some imported goods from other countries start coming back down or slowing their expansion in price. But you won't see that from goods coming from China, which is a lot of where we get our goods from, because, like I said, the Chinese dollar has been relatively strong to the U.S. dollar. So they've kind of been in lockstep. So you won't see that discount there. You know, it's interesting to see that we still have overall a strong U.S. dollar compared to mostly every other country in the world. And so that makes you think, as bad as things are here, that squeeze is being felt in other parts of the world, you know, even worse. So now as we look at kind of to what to do and, you know, how to kind of hedge your bets, you could buy puts. And those are trading options. You know, buying puts is you're betting that the market's going to continue to go down. You'll profit from that. And I've been looking into that as a hedge. I wish I had done a week or two ago. But as a hedge, you know, I don't want the market to fall, but to help, you know, provide some relief, you know, to my portfolio as, you know, the market is crashing. You know, of course, you're still going to lose money, but you'll lose a little less, right? That's the idea of kind of hedging your bets with, you know, with puts. But no matter what, unless you cash liquidated most of your money, most of your portfolio, you know, back in November, you're pretty much firmly in the red. Like I said, I think my strategy is to consolidate a little bit, but still hold, you know, my major players. I don't want to sell at a loss, right? This is when there's prime fear in the market, right? I think they said that the fear in the market right now is just as bad as when the pandemic first hit back in March of 2020, right? So when you're looking at that, you're seeing people panicking. When you panic, you make more irrational decisions. I think the thing to do is just to hold on, because how many times have you seen people say, oh, I wish I had gotten to a stock at that price? Well, now we're approaching those prices. And what people tend to do is not realize that if you zoom out and look at the markets overall, they always go up with time, right? Right now, we're feeling the squeeze of a lot of bad sentiment because of the Fed raising rates, and it's causing a lot of panic and fear in the market. And I think if you were to sell now, you pretty much guarantee your losses, unless you were rotating them into something else. But if you just sold and sat on cash, you've locked in all your losses. The market's not going to go to zero. Could it fall from more from here? It sure can. I could see the NASDAQ easily falling to, what I say, 14%. It could be down to 20, 25%. That could happen. It's happened in the history of the stock market where stocks, the Dow Jones has crashed 80% one time. So this stuff can, in theory, happen. But I think that the government will step in before such a crash happened. I don't think they could, you know, the Biden administration's not going to want to have that on, you know, have this on their watch. And just to be clear, not just throwing stones at the Biden administration. A lot of these dominoes started falling in the previous administration, but we did get hit with a unprecedented pandemic. The only way for the government to, the Fed to keep the economy afloat was to print easy money. And we're starting to see the ramifications of that decision. So this is why I say, you know, we have to kind of be a little bit knowledgeable on what's going on, so you just don't panic sell and make a rash decision. I think, you know, for me, the best thing is to just kind of hold on and, you know, strap in for the ride. If it hurts your eyes too much to see the sea of red in your portfolio, then just don't look at it, bro. Right? For me, I sell weekly options, so I have to go in and look at it. You know, I'm even with those, I collect in premium, but I'm going to get, I might even take a week off, and because it's going to be so volatile this week, because I just don't know how far these, you know, it could easily bounce back next week, you know, up in, you know, 5, 6, 7%, just based off of more dovish news from the Fed and, you know, really big beats on earnings. You know, I don't know, but it could fall like a knife again next week. I don't know, right? No one, if anyone says you that tells you they know, they really don't, right? That's the part of investing. If someone knew exactly what was going on every time, they would be, you know, the richest man in Babylon, but they don't, right? So all you can do is try to adhere to whatever your investment strategy was before. Just know that these things do happen in the market. It's almost natural for the stock market to ebb and flow, maybe not this fast, this rapidly, but bear markets do happen. Corrections do happen. We're definitely in the correction for the NASDAQ. we could definitely get into correction territory for the S&P and for the Dow, which is time will tell. But, you know, as we sit here and look forward and, you know, we're looking at other markets, you'll see the crypto markets doing the same exact thing. Bitcoin at the time of this, I think, is around 30, 35,000. It is far off from its, you know, it's down almost, getting close to down 50% from its all-time highs. But that's almost in lockstep with a lot of these tech plays. Some of these tech plays are down 50, 60% from their all-time highs, so maybe 70. So if you look at Peloton, Peloton is trading for like 20-something bucks. You know, I remember it used to be $120, $130 for Peloton, right? So you have stocks that, you know, are taking bigger beatings than some of these crypto plays. And people say that crypto is volatile, right? I beg to differ. Look at the stock market. So, but if you look at crypto, Bitcoin is down. How much farther can it fall? Because right now, the crypto market has been almost in lockstep with the NASDAQ. The NASDAQ's doing poorly. So is the crypto. It's a little scary to think about because you kind of want crypto to be its own separate market. But so much leverage has come in from institutional investors into the crypto market that they're moving in tandem more than I would like to see. But that's what it is. If you look at Bitcoin, one of the reasons Bitcoin took a big bloodbath, especially on Friday, is for those who don't know that Bitcoin futures contracts, they expire on the last Friday of every month. They do expire on the last Friday of every month. And in order for that to happen, what happens is you have pretty much a battle between shorts and longs, you know, bulls and bears. And they're battling over what the predicted price of Bitcoin will be at the end of the month, right? Generally, what happens is the bears or the people on the short side of these contracts can manipulate the market to continue to drop. It'll happen that these bulls or these people on the long side of contracts who think the price is going to go higher, it will force them to liquidate, right? Because the value of what the whatever collateral they put up versus how much that option contract they have is worth has gotten to a point where they're getting liquidated and they're forced to sell their assets to cover the rest of their margin. And what happened on Friday is it got to a point where the price of Bitcoin sank low enough where $175 million in contracts got liquidated, which once again drove the price even further down. So, and that wasn't just across Bitcoin, it was across multiple assets in the crypto space. But as we know, you know, Bitcoin, Papa Bitcoin is leads the crypto market. So wherever Bitcoin tends to go, the crypto market generally follows in lockstep. Then we have some more bearish news for Bitcoin and crypto overall. So you have Russia Central Bank saying they're proposing a ban on cryptocurrencies. They said that they cite environmental concerns, monetary policy sovereignty as reasons why they want to ban Bitcoin mining specifically. Russia is a big place for Bitcoin mining. So if they were to ban it there, you would see, you know, the price of Bitcoin react negatively. Overall, though, I think that's actually a good thing. I think you want some of these authoritarian states to not have so much of the hashing power for Bitcoin. That's the power you use to validate across the network. You don't want that to be in sort of these states like that. You know, what happened, China banned it last year, and within a matter of months, those miners relocated to more crypto-friendly provinces, countries, and the hashing power not only came back up, but exceeded to what it was, right? So I think the desire to mine Bitcoin is there amongst individuals and companies, but some of these authoritarian regimes in certain countries see Bitcoin, because Bitcoin represents freedom, right? It's not controlled by any state. It's not controlled by any one individual or group of individuals. It's not controlled by a corporation. Anybody can mine Bitcoin, right? It's totally decentralized. There's no head to it, right? There's no policy around it. There's no political regime tied to it. You know, Bitcoin is truly decentralized, and that scares, you know, a lot of authoritarian regimes, because now they're looking at that as a as that decentralization, as freedom that they don't like. They want control. And they look at Bitcoin and say too much freedom. So they want to regulate it out of their spaces, right? So I think that's a good thing. Overall, if Russia was to ban it, I think what you'll see is a big drop in hash rate. And you'll see that get picked up probably here across the U.S., in South America, and other countries that are becoming to be more crypto-friendly. You're seeing that. I think a new report was just released that they said that 53 or 54% of Bitcoin is now being mined with renewables. I expect that to continue to increase because that sometimes is a dog whistle for people who are anti-Bitcoin, saying it's, you know, devastating for the environment. But Christmas lights every year burn way more electricity than Bitcoin ever does, right? So I think that's just something that, you know, dog whistle they like to blow, just to bring, you know, fear, uncertainty, doubt into Bitcoin because they just don't want it to succeed. And lastly, like I said, Bitcoin kind of moves lockstep. The whole crypto market kind of moves in lockstep with the S&P and particularly the NASDAQ. So as we see that correlation continue, if those the S&P and the NASDAQ continue to tank, we could see crypto markets continue to tank. I think Bitcoin's next biggest support level is around 32,000. If it falls below that, 28 is definitely in play. But who knows, right? I've been buying on the way down. I've had a pile of USDC, which is US dollar coin, which is a stable coin. And I've just been having it sit there and, you know, I collect about 10% interest on it. You know, now I'm looking at it as the perfect time to actually deploy that capital to buy Bitcoin. This stuff happens, especially in the crypto market. You're kind of used to these violent swings. I think people in traditional equity markets, especially people who are new investors, they're not used to these, you know, violent swings and they panic. Like I said before, you know, people would be like, oh, you're so lucky they got in Bitcoin at X price when it gets to Y price. But when it's at X price, that's when it's at maximum fear. You know, everybody's saying it's going to zero. Everybody's saying that, you know, it's a failed experiment, X, Y, and Z, right? Now, right now, where everybody's scared and the markets are trembling, it's when you need to buy on things that you have a high conviction in, not sell, right? This is where, you know, essentially millionaires are made. There's you know, what, 7 billion people on Earth? And there's 55 millionaires on Earth. You know, those 55 millionaires on Earth didn't get to be millionaires from being scared to put their money out there, right? There's a small percentage of millionaires on Earth because those are the people who look and see when everybody is panicking, everybody's running out of the burning building, they're running into it and investing, right? I think Warren Buffett said, if you're too scared to hold a security for, you know, 10 minutes, then you shouldn't be too scared to hold it for 10 years, right? It pretty much saying that whatever the time frame is, you should be confident in what your investment is. That being said, I think it's important to, you know, kind of sit back, take a breath. If you need to close your portfolios for a while, just not look at it, definitely do that. Maybe try to formulate a game plan of how you're going to take advantage of these lower prices versus saying how you're just going to panic and sell out of them. For every person, that's going to be totally different. And that's also another reason why I think I said back in a previous episode where I believe in my investment golden triangle, which is stocks, real estate, and crypto, right? So as crypto and stocks are taking a beating right now, you know, I still have my real estate portfolio to fall back on, right? So I still have, I still have rental income coming in. And now, before the Fed raises rates, I'm going to actually take some money out of one of the properties to have some extra cash on the sidelines to invest and try to take advantage of some of these, you know, 52-week lows on, you know, certain stocks and certain coins that I'm very interested in. So I think you need to also, you know, realize you need to build yourself up not just a diverse portfolio in terms of what stocks I'm in or what coins I'm in, but also build a portfolio of real estate that, you know, you still have a source of either positive income or positive equity appreciation that can still happen in almost any market circumstance. Going forward, you know, it's definitely been a choppy week. Next week, I expect it to be just as choppy. can easily break more down, you know, to the downside, or we can see a nice bounce back. I know that's not much of a prediction. You know, I'm pretty much telling you it can either go up or down, but it can do that on any given day. But you just need to be prepared, you know, prepare yourself for the worst. So, you know, if you're mentally in a space where I know the market continue to tank next week with, you know, possibly bad earnings and possibly bad news, more hawkish news coming out the Fed meeting, then when it happens, you're kind of like, you know, it's almost a self-fulfilling prophecy. You say, okay, well, I knew this was going to happen, and you're not, you know, you're not as shocked, and you're less likely to make a rash decision. But on the upside, if it does, you know, the market does improve, then, you know, that's just a bonus, right? So just know that you're going through this temporary point in pain. If you zoom out and look at the S&P or the Dow, the NASDAQ, you know, if you're in a solid company, right, a company that's making money, that actually has revenue, this is not the dot-com bubble. You know, the dot-com bubble, you had companies like Pets.com that was valuated, you know, thousands of times higher than what it should have been, and it had zero revenue coming in, right? Think about that. In the dot-com bubble, you had companies with zero revenue coming in, valuated at ridiculous valuation points. A lot of these companies that we're talking about today have revenue coming in hundreds of millions, in cases like Facebook and Tesla, billions, right? And Google, they're billions of dollars coming in, yet they're getting demolished. Amazon down 5% today. I mean, you know, Amazon's constantly growing. They're infiltrated almost every facet of life. And say that somehow you're trying to tell me that their company's less valuable, I don't believe it. So you just have to try and take a step back. Don't look at this, you know, temporary price and say, hey, you know, I'm a panic sell, and or, you know, hey, you know, I'm going to, you know, my money is going to be losing, it's going all to zero. That's not the case. We have established companies that are continuing to grow, continuing to constantly innovate and change the marketplace. Just not too long ago, who would have thought that you would have an Amazon device? Amazon just delivered books, you know, right? Now you have Amazon devices and across many people's households. You have them, you know, you have Alexas and Echoes. You have Fire Sticks, you know, you have Amazon Prime, you watch TV on it, right? You can watch movies and rent movies. You have same day delivery. You have, they're implementing drones to deliver packages, right? You have so much innovation and so much, you know, that's going, some, even some cars have Amazon Alexa in it, right? You have so much of their market penetration into households. You know, do you think this company is ever going away, right? You know, the biggest thing you hear out of them is they don't have enough, you know, they're constantly hiring, trying to grow their business, you know. So when you take a step back, look at the companies you're invested in. Do you see a major flaw in them? You know, if not, then, you know, I think you should feel secure in your investment. You know, like I said, this is, investing is not a get quick. It should not be a get quick rich type of strategy or, you know, that you've implemented for yourself. This is a more of a long term play. You have to have that longer term mindset. Most people don't get rich overnight, so you need to take a step back, relax, close your laptop or close your phone if you need to. Have confidence that in the track record of, like I said, the S&P, the Dow, the NASDAQ, that over time, it's always gone up. You know, same thing with Bitcoin, right? Given time, it always goes up. It always achieves higher highs, right? Why do you think this time is different? Every time when this type of stuff happens in the market, people always say, oh, this is it. You know, there's been these type of events, these type of situations that have occurred, you know, for the past 100 years that have caused the market to ebb and flow, sometimes violently in one direction or the other. Well, you know, welcome to this one, right? You just need to have confidence, take a step back, take a breath, and, you know, just evaluate, analyze, you know, strategize and execute on a plan that's going to get you through this. And, you know, things will be better on the other side. So just want to come in, give you a quick market update on what's going on, you know, what I see next week's going to look like. And hopefully one day soon, we'll all be back in the black.